Hi, good morning. Thank you all for joining me today for my talk about some SQL tricks of an application DBA. My name is Haki Benita. I'm a software developer. I'm a team leader, and I'm also a DBA and a pretty big fan of PostgreSQL. When I first started my career as a professional developer more than a decade ago, I was working for a very large organization, and this organization had a lot of developers and DBAs. So many, in fact, that we had two distinct types of DBAs. We had the infrastructure DBA that would set up the database and configure storage replications, backups, and do the occasional instance or database tuning. Basically anything that's related to the operating system. And we also had a type of developer we called an application DBA. This DBA would work closely with the developers, sometimes even the customers and the management. And it would be in charge of the schema design, things like tables, indexes, and constraints. And he would do a lot of performance tuning and integration with tools like BIs and ETL processes and stored procedures and so on. So I was an application DBA most of my career. And in this talk, I want to share with you some of some tricks that I picked up along the way in my job as an application DBA. So I want to start with one of my favorite misconceptions that I hear a lot as a DBA, and that indexes are like this magical thing that can make anything faster. So let's look at an example and use a users table that's, I'm sure that most of you have some sort of table that looks like that, might be called customers or employees. And you have an ID, an email, and a Boolean field called activated that is used to indicate if the account was activated. So if we look at the data, we can see that we have 1 million users and 99% of them activated the account. That's pretty good. And at this point, one might think, well, we usually work on the activated users, so we must have an index, right? So we create an index on the activated column of the users table and go on with our day. And if we try to actually query for activated users, we might write a query like that. And we can see that the index is not used. The database decided to use a full table scan or a sequential scan on the user's table. If we try to query for a specific activated user, we can also see that the index is once again not being used. Database uses a sequential scan on the user's table. So what's going on? If we try to query for inactivated users, we can see that the index is being used. So this time the database decided to use the index. So the best way to try and understand why index is not always the best plan is to consider an extreme example. In our case, the table size is 65 megabytes and the index is 7 megabytes in size. So if you had to read the entire user's table, would you read the index as well? Probably not. I mean, why would you? Why read 72 megabytes when 65 is enough? Now, there are additional factors that make a full table scan faster by some degrees than reading a table through the index, but we put that aside for now and concentrate on this example. So you wouldn't use the index to scan to read the entire table, but what about 99%, which was our case? What about 80%, 50%, 40%? So there is a certain threshold after which it makes sense to use the index. So to decide if an index scan or a full table scan is best, the database is using a statistic called frequency. We can see that statistic on our table by querying the table PG stats. For the statistics on the table users and the column activated, we can see that after analyzing the table, Postgres found that the activated column contains two distinct values, true and false. Okay, that's true, we know that is true. And there's also an array of most common values. This would usually be the actual most common values, but in this case, we have only two values. So that's all the values. And for every value, Postgres is maintaining, is keeping track of the frequency. So Postgres know that for the true, the activated true, there's 99% of the table. And the value false appear in less than 1%. Okay, so using this statistic, Postgres knows how to decide whether a full table scan or an index scan is best. So your takeaway from this little section is that when you have columns with high frequency, you should probably avoid an index or be very cautious about just adding an index because it might not be used as you expect. So let's be actually realistic for a minute and say that we do need to query for inactivated users from time to time. Maybe we need to expire them. Maybe you want to send a reminder. So we already know that Postgres will not use the index to query activated users. So why index them in the first place? This is where partial index come in very, very handy. Partial index allows us to index only part of the table. In this case, we want to index only the inactivated users. We already know that activated users will not use the index, so might as well omit them and index only inactivated users. There's another slight difference here is because we are only indexing the inactivated users, we are indexing the ID column and not the actual activated column. So if we try to query for inactivated users, the index is being used. If we are trying to query for a specific inactive users, in this case, 1, 2, 3, once again, the index is used. So that's great. Another benefit of partial indexes is their size. Because we are only indexing a part of the table, the index is much smaller. In this case, you can see that the full index is 7 megabytes in size, and the partial index is only 230 kilobytes in size. That's a significant reduction in size. Now, I also included the size of the index without deduplication. I'm not going to get into that too much, but there's a new mechanism in Postgres 13 that makes the database use less space for indexes, B-tree indexes with a lot of repeating values in the indexed field. So if you're using Postgres 13 with deduplication disabled, or if you're using Postgres versions prior to 13, the size you'll see is 21 megabytes, which makes the size reduction even more significant. So you should definitely consider using partial indexes where appropriate. Okay, so when people ask me what I do, and it's not always easy to explain what we do, especially for non-technical people, I often like to call myself a data plumber because I feel like I'm connecting pipes and moving data through the pipes. So a significant part of an application DBA role is to move data around, whether it's an ETL process or bot loads, migrations, whatever. We are moving data around. So for our next demonstration, let's look at a sample schema of a commerce shop. It's pretty standard. You don't have to dig too much into it. We have a product table, a customer table, and a sale table with a date of when the sale was made, and two foreign keys to the customer and the product. Now, a common task you often need to do is normalize some fields, maybe do some large migrations on the data. In this case, we want to normalize the emails. We want to make it easier to query, and we want to make them predictable. So we want to make all the emails, make sure they are all lowercase. So this can actually be a query that you would run as part of a migration. It's not uncommon to see such queries. And you issue this query, you update the customer table, and you set the email to be lowercase email. You update it, you just updated more than a million rows, and it took you just under 2 seconds. Now, this type of query will, aside from taking like 2 seconds that might lock the table, it will also create a lot of bloat. So I made a habit of always making sure that I'm only updating what needs updating. And this example over here, we really only need to update emails that are not already lowercase or mixed case. So if we add this predicate over here that excludes all the emails that are not already in lowercase, we update a lot less rows, and it's much faster. In fact, 5 times faster, and we created a lot less bloat. So remember, only update what needs updating. This is very common in bulk updates and data migrations, and my personal favorite, those quick fixes in production where you just SSH for a second to update something because I don't know why. So just remember that usually when you do a large update, you should definitely add a where clause somewhere. So let's continue with our example about bulk loads and talk about constraints. Constraints are an amazing feature of RDBMSs. They are what sets us apart from all those key value and NoSQL people. They keep the data consistent and reliable, and we should use them. They are great. So here we are adding 2 foreign key constraints on the sale table. And we also add an index. This was pretty fast. It took 36 milliseconds. The table is empty. And now we can load some data into the table. Into our sale table, we are loading 1 million rows. And it took us 15 and a half seconds to do that. Great, right? Now let's do it backwards. This time we are loading the data into the table. This takes just under 3 seconds, and then we add the constraints. Now, this time, adding the constraints took significantly longer, but overall, if we compare both processes, when we added the constraints and then loaded the data, it took 15 and a half seconds. When we loaded the data and then added the constraints, it took an overall less than 3 seconds. So this is 6 times faster. And you should consider that when you are loading a lot of information into a table. So as far as I know, in PostgreSQL, you can't disable constraints or disable indexes. So what you usually need to do if you are operating on an existing table is to drop and recreate them. Other RDBMSs provide ways to disable constraints, especially for things like that. So let's once again look at loading data into the table. And once again, we load data into the sale table. This time we are loading only 100,000 rows. This is not a lot of data. And let's actually try to query this sale table for sales that were made in the first 10 days of May. We can see that the index we have on the field is being used, and the database did a bitmap index scan using the index, and it completed fairly fast. So are we satisfied? Is this enough? Can we call it the day? Can we go grab a coffee and be done with it? I think we can do better. Let's see how. To understand how we can do better, we need to mention another important statistics the database is using to determine what execution plan to use, what access method to use. And that's correlation. So correlation, according to the documentation, is the statistical correlation between physical row ordering and logical ordering of the column values. To understand this, we're going to use these two illustrations. So the on the left, you can see the index, which is always sorted. And these are the table blocks. So when the correlation is one, when we have perfect correlation, it means that consecutive values of the indexed value are stored physically in adjacent pages. So if this leaf here is one, it's in the leftmost block of the table. And the next value, two, is in the next block. Two, and three, and four. It's perfectly sorted on this. When the correlation is close to zero, it means that consecutive values are scattered all across the table. They are not ordered nicely as we saw here when the correlation was one. Okay, so to intuitively understand what correlation is, there are some data types, types of columns that have a natural high correlation. One example is auto incrementing IDs, because when you generate IDs from a sequence, when you add new rows to the table, you append them at the end of the table, and they are incrementing in automatically in an order. So naturally, they are sorted on disk. Timestamps that log when the row was created or modified also tend to be naturally correlated with the physical storage of the table. Okay, so we can actually inspect this statistics for our columns, once again from the pgstats table. So we query for the correlation from the sale table for the ID and created columns. We can see that our auto incrementing ID field has perfect correlation as we just described, and the creation date has very, very low correlation. It's very close to zero. This means that consecutive values of creation date are scattered all across the table. So to try and improve the correlation, to see how it affects performance, we can load the data again into the table, but this time we are going to load it sorted. We add order by created at. Now, if we look at the stats after loading the data sorted into the table, we can see that created at now has perfect correlation. And to see how it affects performance, we can execute the exact same query to find the sales from the first 10 days of May. And we can see two things. First, the execution plan is much simpler. Before, we used a bitmap scan, and now we use, and now the database decided to use an index scan. We can also see that the execution time is much faster, actually three times faster than before. And the reason for that is the correlation. Before, when the correlation was very low, the database looked at the correlation and he assumed that rows that are within these 10 first days of May are probably scattered all across the table. So we figured that it would be best to scan the index and find the pages where these values may be in, and then read these pages and look for matching rows. When the correlation was perfect, the database figured that, well, it's most likely that a lot of these values are sitting very close to each other on the disk. Maybe even we have a few matching rows inside the same block. So he just iterated over the index, and when he found a match, he read the block. And it's very likely that the next value was in that block or the next one. So to compare, when we had low correlation, the access method was the bitmap index, and it took three times slower than the index scan and when the correlation was perfect. So when the takeaway here is that when you populate a table, you should think about how it's going to be used and perhaps sort the table in a way that can benefit the queries. Another way of sorting a table on disk, if you already populated the table, is using the cluster command. You should keep in mind that it's a blocking operation. It might affect the correlation of other columns in the table. I usually don't use cluster in production unless I know I can allow myself some downtime. So we can talk about correlation without mentioning one of my favorite types of index, which is the block range index. If you read the definition, it mentions a lot of the words that we already mentioned, a lot of the terms that we use to describe correlation from before. So BRIN is designed for handling very large tables where certain columns have natural correlation with their physical location within the table. So to understand how BRIN works, let's do an example. Let's say we have these values each in a single table page, okay? So what BRIN does is that it first take each three adjacent pages and groups them into a range and into a group. And then for each group, it keeps the range of the values inside this group. So 1, 2, 3 are the first group, 4, 5, 6, and 7, 8, 9 are the third group. And for each group, it keeps only the minimum and the maximum. So the first group contains values from 1 to 3 and so on. Let's try to use this index to find the value 5. So the first range holds values from 1, 2, 3. So 5 is definitely not here. No point in even looking at these blocks. And the second group holds a range of values between 4 and 6. So 5 might be here. Notice that I didn't say definitely there. I said that it might be here. And finally, 7 through 9, 5 is definitely not here. So using the index, we were able to minimize the search to just blocks 4 through 6. So let's see how important is the correlation for the performance of a BRIN index. If we have the exact same data, but this time with a very low correlation, meaning the data is not sorted on disk, we do the same. We group them into three groups of three adjacent blocks and then keep the ranges for each one. And now let's try to use this index to find the value 5 like we did before. So this time, the index is useless. We can't actually minimize the search at all because each of these ranges can contain the value 5. So this is how correlation affects BRIN index. To create a BRIN index, you can use this using BRIN clause of create index. And if you want to really experiment with BRIN index, I highly recommend looking at this storage parameter called pages per range. In our example, the pages per range was 3 because we grouped 3 adjacent blocks into a range. The default is 128, and this parameter actually impacts the performance of BRIN very much, so you should experiment with different values. And for the best part of BRIN indexes, they are very, very, very small. The corresponding B-tree on the same field would have been 2 megabytes in size, and the BRIN is just 48 kilobytes. So we are almost done. I don't have much time left. I want to go through three more nice tips and quick tips for database development. So the first one is unlock tables. You know, Postgres has a mechanism called WAL, it's the write-ahead log. It's used to keep track of changes for integrity and to roll forward during recovery and for replication. But it has a certain overhead. And there are situations where you can disable it to make things faster. One such scenario is what I like to call intermediate tables. Intermediate tables are the type of disposable tables, that temporary tables that you create when you are implementing something else. This is very common in data warehouses where you load data from external sources into a staging area and then manipulate the data before you load it into the actual tables. So in this case, the intermediate tables in the staging area can benefit from being unlocked, meaning they will not be replicated, they will not be restored in case of disaster, but it will be a bit faster to work with. So you can use unlocked carefully, but you can gain slight speed ups with unlocked. Second one is what I like to call invisible indexes. Coming from Oracle, I add all sorts of features like type hints, optimizer hints, and a way to actually mark indexes as invisible. In Postgres, you don't have these features. So there are situations where I'm trying to play with an execution plan. I want to see what it might look like without a certain index. So one way to achieve that without actually dropping the index is doing so inside a transaction. This is using the fact that Postgres implements what's called transactional DDA. So you can start a transaction, drop the index, and the index is not really dropped until you commit the transaction. Then you issue your explained plan. You can see what the plan looks like. And when you roll back, nothing happened. This is what I call invisible indexes. And finally, when you need to schedule a long-running process, it's only natural that you would pick a round hour. Now, knowing that everybody else does the same, you can benefit from maybe scheduling long-running processes at odd hours. Like instead of scheduling stuff at 2 a.m., 3 a.m., 4 a.m., try to schedule something at 1:35 and 17 seconds. You have a better chance of finding a system at rest, and maybe your process will run slightly faster because of that. So this is it. I don't have any time left. You can check out my blog. I write a lot about performance and SQL and Postgres and Python web development as well. I'm pretty active on Twitter, and you can subscribe to my mailing list. I try to send something around once a month. And you can also send me an email with your thoughts and corrections and whatever about this talk or anything else. So thank you very much for listening to me, and hopefully you learned something new.